And you know, in the past few Sundays, Doug has been preaching about our mission statement, which is, you can read it here on the front, we are a growing multi-generational family of believers impacting our community for Christ. Now, he has covered the first part of it, and he has left the last part for the elders to do, being he isn't here this morning. And right now, I think the elders are going to come up, right? And yeah. So my part today is I would like to share with you about the Community Ministerial Alliance made up of all of our local pastors. When we have joint services, the collections goes toward helping people who are in need of and Nathan is the treasurer, and through him and Karen, I was told that $2,661 was given to 19 families or individuals who were had various needs this year. And if you know, if you got any questions about that, you can always ask Nathan. He knows how we give that out. Another way our church has an outreach is several of our ladies, every Thanksgiving, they put together Thanksgiving boxes and give them out to all the families. And I think maybe they gave out 24 boxes this year. And, well, the ladies do it, but, you know, they let the men come along and be the pack mules, carry everything in and out. So thanks to the guys, too. Another big way our church serves our community is when someone passes away and our church is asked, the ladies prepare a meal for the grieving families and serve it in the fellowship hall. There are several meals served every year, and I'm sure the families appreciate that very much. Thank you, ladies. The next community outreach started, at least the idea started, back in 2013. When Ada and I were on vacation, we were in Florida, by the way, and I was thinking about how much God had blessed us, and I was wondering how we could do something to give back through the church. The idea we came up with was to have a small amount of supply of food available at the church for anyone that our congregation might know was in need of food. So we came back to Atlanta, and I asked the rest of the elders if it would be all right, and they said it would. So we did that for a couple of years, and we probably only served maybe one family a month or so. And when the church started up the small groups again, I asked the group that I'm a part of if they would be interested in expanding the pantry. And after much discussion, we decided to put some signs up around town and have the pantry open every Saturday from 9 to 11, and our small group would take care of manning it every Saturday. As time went along, the number of families kept increasing, and we could see that we might need some more help to supply the food than just what the congregation was so generously donating. So we turned to a Christian organization called the Midwest Food Bank to supplement our supply. We now go to Morton approximately once a month and pick up a trailer load of food, or sometimes we use the church van and we have to take all the seats out of it. And that's quite a chore, but we do that sometimes. So to wrap up my part, since the first of 2018 and until now, through your contributions in Midwest, the church has been able to serve 310 families who were in need. And just another little footnote, it's amazing what God does. I got home yesterday afternoon, and I had a call from Clinton Power Plant. And they said, do you have a food pantry? And I said, yes. Could you use some turkeys? And I said, yes. And they said, well, how many you want? And I wasn't thinking quick enough, so I said, oh, 10 or 12. She said, you can have 12. I thought about I should have asked for 25. But anyway, they said, well, go over to Save a Lot in Clinton, and they'll give them to you. So it's just great how God works. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, so how are we impacting our community for Christ? How is Atlanta Christian Church impacting the folks outside of these walls. One solution or one answer I'd like to give you, not the answer, not the only answer, would be small groups. On a surface level, small groups can look like, you know, people within the church just getting together and studying and, you know, reading the Bible. I mean, what does that have to do with the folks out there? I believe it to be true that when iron sharpens iron, when we become stronger individuals, not just biblically, not just reading through and doing what we are called to do, but we are able to effectively reach our neighbors, our coworkers, the person across the street, other people within the community. Now, specifically, how can we do that? When small groups come together, one component of a small group is serving, getting together with your group and serving the community. One way that this church has done that effectively, like Tom was saying, was through the food pantry. Or not was, but is through the food pantry. That was put together and still ran by a small group. Another small group recently went through the church and cleaned up the church, kind of decluttered some of the space that we had. And you think, well, how does that impact the community? Well, when we have the space to effectively use, we're able to have youth group. And correct me if I'm wrong, Warren, but the majority of youth group, these youth, they're not kids that we see on Sunday morning, right? This is effectively their church. We're giving them space that they can use. Same with VBS. Another small group put together the library, which allows us as Christians to have resources to maybe kind of look at some of these issues that are going on out there. If you know of somebody in need and you just don't know exactly how to help them, there's resources in the library. Same with the prayer room. I mean, prayer is a powerful tool, guys. We've got that. That was put together by a small group. And like Tom was saying, the hospitality troop team, they function like a small group when they put together the funeral dinners or when they even serve the other groups within the church, allowing these groups to serve others. For example, a couple Sundays ago, we had Operation Christmas Child. The hospitality team so graciously served everybody lunch. And then in return, we were able to pack shoeboxes, 262 shoeboxes. It all goes together. So I guess what I'm saying is we don't have to stand out there individually and try to serve the community. It's a good thing, and I'm not saying don't. But, man, is there not strength in numbers? Is there not strength when you can gather with fellow believers and do the work of God and effectively impact the community? It reminds me of Matthew here in chapter 5, 14 through 16. It says, "You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." Small groups is just one way that Atlanta Christian Church can impact our community.
Tom already read the vision statement, and we know we're in our last week of this vision statement, and we've gone through the first three main parts, but now it really comes to, I think, maybe the most important part. What do we do in here that affects who we are out there? And so this morning I want to talk to you about something I'm very passionate about. How does corporate worship, how does what we sing and the fellowship we have together, and how does, when we come around the Lord's table and when we give offerings, how does that affect, how does that make an impact on our community for Christ? I want to give you a very simple definition of worship. Worship is an intentional conversation that God initiates and to which we respond. And although music is a big part of worship, it's a big part of worship for me, and I'm sure it's a big part of worship for many of you. Worship is not just singing. It is a life lived proclaiming who God is and what he has done. Who God is and what he's done. Worship is not confined to a time, 10 o'clock, and worship is not confined to a space in this beautiful old building on a Sunday morning. It's not confined to that. When we gather together as a church, we are simply continuing a conversation that's already been going the other 6 days of the week. Does that make sense? Except now it's corporate. We're together. So let me ask you this question. How does our corporate worship fit into the last part of that vision statement? How does what we do in here affect who we are out there? And should it? Can it? I think it does. How does corporate worship impact our community for Christ? We're going to have Colossians 3:16 up on the screen. And that says, "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs with thankfulness in your hearts to God." I want you to leave that slide up there just for a minute. So what does it mean to have the word of Christ dwell in us richly? Well, that means we take the word with us for you at a gathered church to do ministry out there, outside of the walls. When we express our thankfulness in our hearts corporately, it reminds us that being thankful to God requires some action. We can't just say that we're thankful to God. We have to put action behind that statement. It requires evangelistic action in His name by loving people outside of the four walls of the church. So the church gathers to worship Jesus, and we scatter to evangelize and proclaim His name. Our evangelism and the potential that we have to impact our community, whether that be in our home, in our school, in our places of work, in our various circles of influence, it's fueled by a life of worship. So our impact is fueled by our life of worship. And where is that worship most energized? Well, I believe it's inside here when we come together and we worship corporately. That's where our worship is energized, and that's what fuels our potential to impact our community for Christ. So, if we don't do a good job as a church when we gather together to worship, it affects how God can use us when we leave this place. If we don't do a good job impacting our community for Christ, it affects our passion and ability to worship corporately when we come back here on Sunday morning. So it's very cyclical. Corporate worship and personal worship go hand in hand to effectively spread the gospel message, and you can't have one without the other. So what is my vision for Atlanta Christian Church in regard to impacting our community through our worship? You know, I want to see ACC become less of a come-and-see church and more of a go-and-be church. Does that make sense? Less of a come-and-see and more of a go-and-be. It's just as important to be the church out there as it is to come into the church building here. Psalm 34:1 is going to be on the screen. That says, "I will bless the Lord when His praise shall what? Continually be in my mouth." I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually. So that kind of undergirds this idea of living a life of worship. So I have another question for you today. What is the difference between singing people in church and singing people out of the church? What is singing in and singing out? What's the difference? So let me put it to you this way. If we as a church spend all of our time and energy leading church services as an act of worship, we can easily neglect to lead our church in service. Not only must we lead church services, we also have to lead our church in service. And that's a very externally focused idea, not an internally focused idea. In other words, if our entire focus is on singing people in, then we have nothing left to sing them out. So it doesn't really matter how good the worship songs are in here, because that's incomplete until they make an impact on who we are out there. Does that make sense? Service is the action we take to ensure the songs we sing when we gather really ring true in our hearts when we leave this place. That's our goal. So most congregations can answer affirmatively if they've asked if they welcome outsiders to their worship services. I'd like to think we as ACC would always welcome outsiders into our worship service if or when they come. But singing them out, however, is when a congregation changes its culture in order to be intentionally welcoming to those outside of the walls of the church. So welcome focuses primarily on the needs of the congregation, but being welcoming includes the needs of the world. So welcoming loves my neighbor even when my neighbor is not very easy to love. So singing them out. Singing them out is when we are so awakened by God's purpose in the world that we can't wait for the service to end so we can actually go out and be the church. In other words, our worship service doesn't end with the amen of the closing prayer. Our service continues when we walk out that door and remain faithful to the Great Commission, Christ's Great Commission. When this awareness occurs, our singing is no longer focused on just consuming as we gather, but also as we disperse. So once we commit to sing them out, we might realize that the songs we sing at church, they might not be the most important worship that happens all week. The songs we sing at church might not be the most important worship that occurs. And we'll stop investing all of our resources on a weekly gathering to ensure that we have enough left over on what should be a daily occurrence. So how many of you have seen the movie Castaway? There is a scene from the movie. Let me see your hand, the movie Castaway. It came out about 18 years ago, and it's a very intriguing movie. I want to talk about this a little bit this morning. It features Tom Hanks, and he plays the part of a character called Chuck Nolan. And Chuck was a lone plane crash survivor on an uninhabited island. And early in this movie, Nolan realized that he couldn't live without fire. In one famous scene, we can see his resolve, despair, and anger and humor as he kind of labors over starting this fire. When he finally gets it started, he's so happy, he's so exuberant. Just to be honest with you all this morning, those of us who lead worship in the church and those of us who have any type of leadership role in the church, we can experience similar emotions to what he is going through, because we are expected to light a fire each and every Sunday with the opening song. And even though congregations might not have done anything to help stir those embers during the week, it's easy for people to blame the leaders when that fire isn't reignited week after week after week. So because of the labor-intensive I want to tell you about a fire pot. Ancient nomadic peoples began to use earthenware vessels, and they were called fire pots. And they would carry these embers around with them. They were slow-burning fires, and they traveled with these fires from one location to the other. And just by adding small quantities of fuel to the fire, they could keep alive these many fires for a long time. And what that did was it enabled them to quickly ignite larger fires when they united as a group for their evening camps. What if we had the very same understanding about what worship is? What if we saw worship as not a fire to start each week, but a flame that we take with us when we leave this place? Then it could continue as we leave the service. It could happen in our homes. It could happen in our schools. It could happen in our places of work. It couldn't be contained in one single location. So consequently, instead of depending on our pastors to start that fire from scratch week after week, they could just help us fan those flames that already exist. So I'm going to conclude this morning with a challenge. When you leave this place today, I want you to take your fire pots with you. I want you to, through study and through service and through relationships and through worship and through the many ways that you serve God, the way you treat your family, the way you treat your coworkers, I want you to keep those embers going strong. Go and be the church Jesus commands us to be. Let his praise, like the psalm said, let his praise be continually on our lips. And my prayer for you is this, that because you were here today to worship corporately, you would depart to make an amazing impact on your community for Christ. And because you made an impact on your community, you can come back into this place next week with a vigor for service and for worship. So that is my challenge for you today.
While I was sitting there listening to Nathan, it brought to mind an old story I'd heard. And that is probably the shortest sermon on record. No deposit, no return. See y'all next Sunday. Nathan, that's got to be the longest I've ever heard you talk. Mine will not be quite that long. We all have a calling. And similar to a phone call, we have a decision to make when we hear that calling. First, we have to decide whether we're going to answer. That may be hard for some of us and easy for others, but we still have the decision to make. The second decision we have to make is, if we accept the call, how long are we going to talk? Or how long are we going to perform? That is also difficult for some and a lot easier for others. But just like the calling, it moves us to think about our impact upon the community. Now, with our actions and with our thoughts, we all plant seeds that affect what kind of person we are growing into and the level of impact we're going to have for the lives around us for God. We get to decide. Once more, a decision that we have to make for ourselves. Once more, for some of us, it's easy to say, I want to live and reach as many people as I possibly can. For others, I'm satisfied with where I am today and don't want to do any more. It's our choice. I'd like to urge you to think about everything that has contributed to the story of how you came to know Christ as your Lord and Savior. Who was that person that was most influential in your life? Was it someone at your own age at the time you accepted? Was it someone older than you that came to you and urged you to make a decision in your life? Once again, decisions had to be made. Our vision is to be a multi-generational family of believers impacting our community for Christ. This means that we must leave these walls and go out into the community. We have to make a decision on who we want to touch. Have you ever really considered your role in accomplishing this formidable task? This calling is not reserved for just a designated few, but for all of Christ's followers. It is a calling of being bold enough to reach out to those inside your circle of influence and outside your circle of influence, because we don't know who might need to hear what we have to say. I remember being told some years ago by a good friend of mine that I had a great deal of him being able to come to Christ. Now, I didn't have any idea what he was talking about. I didn't realize when this had happened. And I really thought and thought and thought. And finally he says, you don't remember, do you? And I said, no. He said, you invited me to youth group one Sunday night. And then we kept going. And he said, I can't thank you enough for you being there when I needed someone to bring me to Christ. And I can tell you, after watching this gentleman over the years, he has truly grown. I wonder how many of us have really considered the words or the deeds that we perform on a daily basis, or even the impact that they may have on others. Sometimes I think we need to be more cognizant of what we say and do. The story that I've just told you is beneficial to me because it strengthens the fact that no matter our age, we all can have an influence on those around us. It just so happens that this story happened when I was a teenager. It could have happened later on in life. We don't know when we're going to touch someone else's life. It's probably not possible to fully count all the spiritual seeds that God used to draw you to him.
or even all the people involved in your acceptance of Christ. However, just consider where you would be today if all these circumstances had not come into play. We do not know where or how or why God is choosing the time or the place that we are to deliver the opportunity for someone to come to know Christ. But we can rest assured that we must not shirk our duties. So I'm calling upon you today to look around this community. Think about how you can truly impact the life of the elderly, the young adult, the youth. Whether it be old to old, old to middle-aged, old to the youth, or anywhere in between, we all can have an impact on someone else's life. Luke 10:2 says, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." May I call upon all of us to be the laborers within this community, that we might go out and we might touch someone else's life to enjoy the life that we have with our Savior.
Well, I think these four gentlemen have done a wonderful job with the introduction, and so let's get into the body of this thing. Let's get going here. The year was 2010. And Apple had just announced that they're going to release the iPad, these wonderful little iPads here. And they said it's going to be miraculous and it's going to be revolutionary. And here's what you're going to be able to do. You're going to be able to surf the internet. You're going to be able to listen to music. You're going to be able to take pictures and look at photos. And you're going to be able to watch videos. I'm thinking, I can already do that. I had an iPhone at the time. I could do all that stuff on the iPhone. I even had an iMac, a desktop computer, at home. It's like, why do I need an iPad? Like, what? I remember even having a discussion at work. It's like, well, what purpose would that fill? Why do I need to spend money on that? I mean, I can already do all those things. Well, here it is, 2018, and I think you would agree that the iPad has really revolutionized a lot of things. I mean, you see them in kiosks all over the place and point of sale and medicine. I know in aviation I had like this case I would carry with me, a big case, and it had all my charts in it, paper charts. Wherever I was going to fly, I had my takeoff, destination, everything in between, and I had to put it in there. There's a place I put in an airplane, open it up, there are all my paper charts. And I can literally grab this thing and I have a world revolutionary. It really has. So if you look over here on the side, you see this plastic up here, and what's happening is Todd and his crew are they've got a big hole in the wall over here, and they're opening this all up, and pretty quickly here we're going to be able to kind of exit in there and flow into this new facility that we call the gate. And here's what we're going to be able to do. We're going to be able to do funeral dinners, and we're going to be able to do like fellowship and potluck and have special events and all these wonderful things. And people are saying, but wait a minute. Like, we can already do all that stuff. I mean, why would we go to all this trouble? Why would we, go to all this expense just to be able to do this? Well, I truly think it's going to be revolutionary. I think it's going to change everything in ways we can't, I can't even imagine. Sure, we're going to be able to do all the regular stuff, but the kids walk in there, and they see the high ceiling, and they're like, dodgeball court. This is going to be great. Look downstairs, they see the ramp, they're like, skateboard park. And I know Terry and Jim over here they've had the tape measures out, and they're saying, pickleball court, which, you know, would be really cool, an activity to do these things together. I know blood drive, a place to vote, things like that. This facility will be used in ways that we cannot even imagine for community outreach. And real quickly, I want to go to Matthew Matthew chapter 5. I think it's on page 659 in your pew hymnals, if you'd like to take a look at that. Mike kind of was there a little bit earlier. But Jesus is giving the Sermon on the Mount, and he's talking to his disciples. And he tells them who they are, what they're to be, but he gives them a warning. Gives them two very important warnings here also. Matthew chapter 5, starting at 13, he says, here's what you are, disciples, speaking to his disciples. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled on by men. Salt, it's good for our bodies, electrolytes. It has cleansing properties and disinfecting properties. But what if it didn't have any of that stuff? And what if the church didn't do what it was supposed to do as a church? What if the church didn't have the properties of a church? That it just came with inside these walls and just met together to sing a few songs on Sunday, or to meet and talk amongst ourselves about the Bible? What if we went into this building and we just used it to just kind of contain us in these walls? He goes on. He says the second thing. First, you're salt. Second, you are the light of the world. A city on a hill, Mike said this, a city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. We've seen an amazing thing happen with the construction of this gate. I mean, it's literally been a miracle how this is how. This congregation, when we tell other churches about that, they're like, how did you do that? How did this happen? And it's like we ventured to do something impossible, something so great that it could only be possible if God was a part of it. And it has been. And what a tragedy that would be if we would just keep that here. And like, oh man, wasn't that amazing? Look what God has done. We have to proclaim it. Impacting our community for Christ is being salt. It is being light. And that's what we're called to do through our food pantry, through our small groups that are serving. How terrible that would be if we just went into houses and just talked among ourselves. And individuals just leaving this place, just in our workplace and talking about Christ. And with this new facility we call the Gate, it's going to be revolutionary. Some amazing things are going to happen. So I think we're going to have the worship team come back up. Guys, it's just such a pleasure to serve along with these elders. And we're praying for Doug today as he travels. And we're going to sing one more song. But let's be truly a church that does what a church does, is salt and light in our community. Amen?